A very warm welcome to everyone sitting here in Meditation Hall in Gyan Sarovar. And we also have an online viewers joining us on YouTube. And I would really like to welcome and invite all our online viewers to come and feel that you are right now in Meditation Hall in with us here and feel the Madhuvan vibes. So today we have a very special guest, Brother Charlie. Brother Charlie came to Baba in 1975 in the UK. He started the centers in Australia, and he is currently the director of Brahma Kumaris Australia. And he is not just only sustaining the centers in Australia, but he also sustains the souls in Asia and the rest of the world. The quality that I really admire of Brother Charlie, or I would say the quality that I like, is that of love. It's very that motherly, you know, like the quality of Jagadamba, the world mother. And being with Brother Charlie around, I feel that he's very approachable. You know, it's very easy to go to him and, you know, ask and get the guidance or whatever you need. He's very humble, he's very obedient, he's very faithful to Baba. I mean, I can go on and on with the list, but maybe I'll stop here and I will hand over to Brother Charlie, and we will hear on the topic, the love story of all time. Thank you, Brother Charlie.
Om Shanti. Thank you so much, Sister Darty. Maybe I should introduce her. I'm not sure whether everyone knows Darty. Darty is originally from Gujarat, but spent about 10 years in Melbourne, I think. And she's presently in Pune, in here in India at the moment, and helping out with the double foreigner season. And I would really love to add to Darty's welcome, because I just arrived in Madhuban a couple of days ago. So special to be here. And whoever is listening online, I would really suggest if you can come, I would make the effort if it's possible and comfortable. Try to make the effort, because what I'm experiencing is that the contrast of Baba's world and that world out there is just growing. It's just huge at the moment, and just stepping into Baba's world is so tangible, isn't it? The purity of this atmosphere, the sweetness of this atmosphere. And we all need to bathe in that atmosphere every so often. And sitting in the meditation hall at the moment, there's probably about 20 of us sitting here. This is the double foreigner season at the moment. A group has just left and more are coming, but it's really a very small season at the moment. And this subject, the true love story for all time, may sound a little dramatic, but in a sense, I feel it's incredibly true. And, you know, sometimes I reflect on what happened last cycle. What happened to all of us 5,000 years ago, that for the second half of the cycle, for 63 births, we are so deeply motivated to find Baba, to find God. What did we receive from God last cycle? That every life, I believe that we, at some point in that life, this feeling would kick in, this search to find true love, to find my truth. Because we tasted something so extraordinary last cycle, we're just totally motivated to re-find that feeling. And about 3.5 years ago, I went to Pakistan, and I was invited to an interfaith conference in the north of Pakistan, in Lahore, which is the second biggest city in Pakistan in the north. That was an incredible experience, but that's a whole other story. But afterwards I went to Karachi. And actually when I was taking leave to go, I went to say goodbye to Dedi Jenki, and I talked to her about a few things. And we'd finished talking, and you know how Daddy, when she was in her last few years, she would go to get the toli and the blessings and take her a little bit of time, and she was sort of fiddling with the toli and blessings. And I said, Daddy, I'm going to Karachi. I'm going to Pakistan. She just kept doing this, getting her... She suddenly looked at me like, what? She said, take my soul with you. That's what she said, take my soul with you. And really, that was such an amazing feeling for me. I don't know how to describe it, but somehow it filled in something really deep in me about the Yajna, about Baba, Sakar Baba, about Shiv Baba, about the whole Yajna history. And when I arrived in Karachi, a few of the sisters who lived there took me to Baba's home. And we were really lucky because previously not many had been able to visit Baba's home because it's a private residence. Because Brahma Baba lived about 2.5 kilometers from Kunch Bhavan, where all the sisters used to live. Magnificent home. And in a way, it sort of really gave me the feeling of how really royal and Baba's status, because just up the road was a massive palace. I can only describe it like that, where the leader of Pakistan, Jenna, his sister, lived just about 50-100 meters up the road. So Baba was really like in the best part of town, if you can say it. We then went to Sydenham Port, where you know those photos of them in the boat leaving for Gujarat, the coast of Gujarat, and the port is exactly the same. Just like Baba's home was exactly the same. And then we went to Clifton Beach, all those photographs of the girls in the skirts, you know, exercising. Clifton Beach is completely different. They've reclaimed about 5 kilometers of land. But we ended up at Kunch Bhavan and Baby Bhavan, which was right beside Kunch Bhavan, where all the young mothers and children would live, were living. And that was such an incredible feeling to be there, because it's a huge house, 3 stories. It's hard to describe. I think there was around 200 sisters living there. Can you believe how huge that place was? It's now a school. It's a very trendy high school. But when I went in there, I can honestly say I was there for hours, and we walked all around, and all the photos I could see where they were taken, where the sewing machines were, the classrooms, everything. But I had such a feeling of the love that Shiv Baba brought down into this world. And I would say that it was almost like, you know, Shiv Baba, the ocean of love, just came into Sakar Baba, into Brahma Baba, and just filled him with love. And here was Brahma Baba with a huge business, a family, so established reputation, he just let it go. He found something so much more powerful than what he had, which was the experience of divine love or pure love. And we know really Baba just didn't over time, he just almost let it go instantly. And I remember once in the early 1980s, I went to Kolkata. And I went with Dada and Anka Shaw, who some of you will remember. Dada A.K., we called him, wonderful brother, great sense of humor. He was the first one to translate the Sakar Maulis into English. And Dada took me to Baba's shop in the New Market in Kolkata. And when we went there, he showed me there was a counter at the back where Baba sat, one on the side Vishwakishore, the other side Anankishore. You know, he showed me everything. And then we went and we met a few of the Sindhi jewelers who were there. And, you know, they were still had their businesses there. And one of them got out some photo albums, and he was showing us photo albums of the 1930s. And there was a photo of Dada and Anankishore wearing the most beautifully tailored suits from London with those, you know, those shirts with those little leaning on his Mercedes Benz, you know. He was obviously a real lad about town, you know. And I really got a picture just how well-to-do they were. They were very fashionable, upmarket people. And then Shiv Baba came and the dramatic change in Brahma Baba. Why? Because Baba sort of tasted that connection that was just so full of love. And just being in that Kunch Bhava and the sense of how the ocean of love descended into this place and filled Brahma Baba with that love. And then Bhaptada filled the daddies with that love, and the same process happened. Young women, you know, about to start life, and yet they just went, they let go their desires, they let go so much because something greater came, and it was really the pull of true love, the pull of pure love, the pull of divine love, the pull of unadulterated love was just so strong that it pulled them beyond too. And in a sense, it's like Bhaktada and the daddies have filled us with all that sort of same feeling, because to me it's the great power. You know, we've had 63 births of body conscious action. We have 63 births of the inheritance of these old body conscious sanskaras. How do we actually lift ourselves out of that powerful place? It's the power of this love that I think really does it. And I have a clear memory of sitting in a meeting with Daddy Jenki, and it was, I can't even remember what the meeting was, to be frank, but anyway, we were just chatting about different things, and then she stopped and she gave us all drishti. And you know how sometimes with the daddies, just, it was almost like her eyes were like little light bulbs of love just radiating. And I always remember, it became so silent. You know how that lovely vibration just takes over? And she said, "It's love that makes me move. It's love that has taken me beyond all my limits." You know, and she just, her life is a testimony to go beyond all limits. It's love that's made me tireless. And she said, love is like a blessing. It's a sakash. It's like an energy. And in my experience, when you taste that quality of love, that pure love from Shiv Baba, it converts into power. It's that energy that gives you a sense of willpower to deal with your sanskaras, to deal with some memories, to deal with your own issues. It just, you know, pulls you beyond. And I really feel that's the great power of this life. And if I really reflect on all my Brahman life, and you know, I often share this in a way, what has sustained me for all these years is that experience of love. And I find when I observe myself, and what I love about this life is you just become this gentle observer of the self, just watching, I think, what's going on inside my head, what's going on inside my heart. And when I observe my inner world, when my heart is full of love, I've noticed I feel so relaxed. I feel so easy. You know, I feel so content. And definitely my attitude to others changes, you know. I feel much more compassionate and understanding of others. But when the other side is there, when the heart lacks love, I feel the mind can never rest. You know, that mind, that agitated mind that just searching, seeking, looking, it can never stop. That mind that even when you put your head down to sleep is just constantly going, 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 going. To me, it's this sort of almost like the subtext of human life, this search to find that true love, that pure love, that divine love, that sort of, when you taste it, it's like your whole inner world just goes, ah, and now I've come home really to where I belong. And so many times I've had the thought that, you know, in the whole of eternity, in the whole of eternity, this is the only time I can taste God's love. This is the only time I can really know this quality of love, this purity of love. It's only available now. The golden age is a world of love, there's no doubt. But I can only taste this love from the divine at this time. And in the Gita, you know, it says that out of millions, only a few, you know, only a few recognize me, and out of those few, only a handful understand me as I truly am. I've often thought about that. You know, we're the few, but have I become the handful, one of the handful? Do I really know Baba as he is, or am I still slightly polluted with my devotional ideas about who God is and what God does? And, you know, I've thought about that a lot. How deeply have I recognized Baba? Have I recognized Baba's love? Have I tasted Baba's love? Because to me, that's the sort of the icing on the cake of this life. So, sort of the pinnacle experience which unleashes the power to bring complete change in myself. And, you know, I once was with a brother in Australia who was telling me that he attended a workshop of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, whom some of you know. Amazing woman who used to teach a lot about grief. And she believed that all of us have this suppressed grief inside of us. And so when there's a little loss in life or a big loss, it opens a wound, a pre-existing wound that's sitting in us. So when we lose a family member, they die, or we lose a friendship through conflict or differences, or we lose a job, we lose anything, it sort of, it opens up this wound, this sense of loss that we've had. And this brother, he attended one of her workshops, and, you know, during the workshop she tells people to explore all this sort of stuff, and he felt all this grief. He said, I hadn't felt before. And he felt it was because his little sister died of cot death when she was just a baby, and he went through all this. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came up to him and listened. And he told the whole story in detail of his little, he was 10 years old when his little sister died. She listened so patiently, and then she said, that's not the real loss. The real loss is that at some point of time, you lost the love of God. We've known the love of God. We've experienced the love of God, but somewhere, and we know in the second half of the cycle, or really right at the beginning, the soul disconnected from that perfect form of love. And in a sense, that's the ultimate sort of grief in the human soul. I've lost this perfect union, this perfect connection, this divine connection. And hence why I think birth after birth, life after life, the soul has searched for it. And so many times I've shared my experience because of this topic. that once I was, I went to New York with Didi Manmohini in 1980. And Didi went on a tour. It was a wonderful tour. And I flew back to Australia via India. And not a very straight route to come back from New York, London, India, Australia. It took a long time. But when I was in Madhuban, I was the only double foreigner there at the time. I was just passing through. And we were sitting in Morley class one day, and all the senior sisters had come from around India for a meeting, but there wasn't a scheduled visit from Baba. Anyway, Dadiji, and everyone who knows Dadiji's Morley reading, you know, it was so lively, you know, it was so entertaining. She was reading the Morley and she kept saying, look, all of Baba's original jewels here, Baba should come and meet you. And she went, every 5 minutes she'd stop the Morley and say this. And at the end of the Morley, she said to Daddy Gulzar, come. She said, come, sit, go to Baba. You know, only Dadiji had the power to do that sort of thing. And Daddy Gulzar is, you know, the most humble human being that's ever existed, I think. She came and she went to Baba, and Baba came. Just absolutely spontaneous, you know. But it was an amazing scene, because I was just sitting in front and all of these sisters came up to Baba. And this is, 8 a.m. in the morning. For 2 hours, each one came to Avyapata. They lay across Baba's lap. And Baba held each one, and he gave them drishti. He stroked them. He asked them, questions. How's your health? But what I observed was how Baba just filled a quality of love in them that sort of healed. That it sort of healed something. It just was. And really, I think sitting in front of that scene, I really realized why the daddies became the daddies. God filled that much love in there that they just let everything go. All the old stories, all the old pain, all the old stuff that often we seem to hold on to for one reason or another. Baba just flushed it out with that incredible love. And sometimes I have the thought, what is meditation? When we teach it to people, out there, we give them a very technical explanation, sit down, become a soul and all that sort of stuff. But in one way, I feel what is meditation? It's just allowing yourself to be completely loved by Baba. And in a sense, I think to sit in front of Baba as a small child, absolutely small child, and open my heart and allow myself to be completely loved. What is knowledge? Knowledge is observing where I block that love. Where do I suppress that love? What is stopping that love to come in? If I'm sitting in front of divine love, pure love, perfect love, the love, the belonging, the relationship that I've searched for half the cycle, and I can't taste it, why? And almost always, I would say, it's my sense of inferiority. That sense of lack of self-value, the ultimate result of 63 births of devotion is this incredibly limited, low vision on myself, which I'm absolutely addicted to and stuck in. And that is the block that doesn't allow me to access a quality of love that's just there in front of me. And I think, when we hear these sort of things that sometimes maybe we feel a little bit sad, I sit in front of Baba, sometimes I can't feel that. It's going to happen. And don't panic, don't worry, but just, observe what is it in me. It's my sense of inferiority, it's the sense that I'm really not lovable that blocks that feeling from Baba. So what is meditation? Sitting in front of Baba. Allowing myself to be loved. What is knowledge? Observing how I block that. Why do I block that? What is service? To me, service, really the ultimate service, is just becoming that instrument to share that love wherever. And I remember once we had a call of time in Australia with Daddy Jenki, and there was a lovely person who came who was sort of a student at our centre, and she was a politician. Her name was Kay. And at one point, Daddy Jenki said to Kay, "Kay, you should become the daddy of Australia." And Kay is a pretty sharp person. She said, "Okay, Daddy, what do daddies do? What's the job description?" that was her response, very much a politician, hey? And Daddy's response, "Oh, just love everybody. That's the role of a daddy, just love everybody." And it's so true, isn't it? When you sort of, I think in a way, I've often thought, why are the Brahma Kumaris so successful? Because Baba puts these loving daddies and loving mothers in centers, and that just energy soothes people and heals people in that way. And so, this incredible feeling, and I often also, talking about this subject, remember a time I spent with Jagdish Bhai in Delhi, in Shaktinagar. That was the centre he was based in. He was an extraordinary soul. I went there once, and I wanted to spend a few days just to chit-chat, you know, just really. And I remember one night we had dinner and I said, can I speak? And he said, yes, I've got half an hour. This was sort of like 8 o'clock at night. We spoke till midnight, you know. And it was an amazing conversation. He was so open, completely open. But what I remember him saying, which has really lasted with me, you know how sometimes certain things just trigger something really deep. And he just said to me, the cycle is a love story. And it just sort of went boom, 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 boom. It just made so much sense. And he went on to say, you know, the golden age is a world of love. And in a sense, when you think about the golden age, there's no duality. I don't think we can perceive that at this time. A world where there's no like, dislike, accept, reject. It doesn't exist. There's only connectedness, openness, love, belonging. And that's recorded in our sanskaras. I often believe why Brahmins feel very disappointed if there is differences with others, because somehow we have the memory of perfect relationship. And so if we don't experience it, we feel a failure, quite frankly. What's wrong with me that I can't really, because it's recorded in me half a cycle of absolutely open, pure connectedness and no concept of anything else. I once, when I in my early days too, we went up to Guru Shikha, which is right at the top of the, you know, Mount Abu. And in those days, you know, there was a lot of trance, you know, and Daddy Manaharindra came up with us. And there was a group of double foreigners, and she gave us all drishti, trying to send us into trance. And then we all danced around like fairies, you know. And anyway, I didn't go into trance, unfortunately. But one young brother from London did. And he was away, just completely. He came back, we were going back to Madhuban in this old Madhuban bus. And I'll never forget, you know, we asked him, what did you experience? And he said, Baba took me to the golden age. And I remember he had tears. He just said, you can't imagine the atmosphere in that place. He said, it's indescribable in the language of now. You know, a whole world where there's no concept of difference. He said, it just can't describe to you the feeling, the pulsating, you know, pulsating feeling of belonging and love and connection. And, you know, when you look at that's where we started and where do we end up at the end of the cycle. But then Jagdish Pai said an amazing thing, that he said, when we come to the copper edge, it's not that we stop loving, we just love the wrong things. And he said that when we love material things and money, it becomes greed. When we love the bodies of others, it becomes lust and attachment. When we love my own body, it becomes ego. In a sense, the vices are just these perverted forms of love. And that made so much sense to me. And then in a way, Baba gives us this incredible education, how to love him. And as we love accurately, the effect of those vices starts to have less impact on us. It's a natural consequence when I have that quality of love or that true love in that way. And sometimes I think that Baba has come to give us this incredible education. What is true love? How to love accurately. And one of Baba's one-liners, which has also had a, you know, real effect on me, was when Baba said that true love is, you know, to true love is to love that which always exists. And when you love anything temporary, you attach your heart to anyone, anything temporary, you build fear and insecurity into your own life. The secret of life is to only love that which always exists. And understand that everything comes and goes in this incredible journey. But if I love, my focus of my love is towards everything that always exists, then this deep healing process can happen. And so Baba, in a way, all he does is teach us how to love accurately, and that shift from loving, you know, from temporary to permanent, from physical love to spiritual love, to from love based on emotion to love based on truth. That's a huge difference. That love based on emotion is that love that loves you one day and can't stand the sight of you the next day. You know, that sort of love. It's sort of, it's always up and down. You never know where you stand. But love based on truth is Baba's love, because when we sit in front of Baba at the end of the cycle, it's like Baba takes a digital photograph of my beauty. He can see the original beauty and he loves that. No matter how body conscious I've become, how weak I've become, Baba sees beyond that and holds that in his vision. And even we may fluctuate, go up and down here and there, but Baba maintains his vision on that place. I believe that's what the daddies did too. And that's why when you are under that, you start to regain the confidence in yourself once more, that love based on truth, completely different to the body conscious love, which is the love based on emotion. And then from dependent love to pure love, this huge shift from temporary to permanent love, from physical to spiritual, from emotion to true love, from dependent love to pure love, this incredible journey. And in one sense, you can say all in life, we're always transferring our love. It's the nature of human life that, you know, as a little child, we love mum and dad. And then as we grow up, you know, life, the journey means we'll love the partner, and then the children, then the grandchildren. Actually, we're always transferring our love as we grow. I mean, we still love our parents and everyone, but in a way, Baba's just saying, now, children, transfer your love to me. And I honestly believe the real method that God teaches is, you know, if you love the right things, you will become completely pure. That's all we have to do. We have to love the right things. But if I love some of the right things and I'm still loving some of the old things, the temporary things, it doesn't, the formula doesn't absolutely work as it should. And so this life, in a sense, is refocusing my love. And the first thing, I think, is loving Baba as a soul. And that's a huge thing, because we've expressed love through our sense organs. I, the soul, sit here and I express my love through the sense organs. To have a relationship with someone who doesn't have sense organs, it's a big change, isn't it? It's a massive shift. And during the cycle, the second half of the cycle, we've had this sort of devotional love for God, but we've actually had this sort of love through the sense organs for others. And one of the, you know, the stories in the Yajna about Daddy Prakashmani, I've heard so many versions of it, I'm never sure. But it's, I really love it, because when Baba in 1968, just before Baba became Avyakt, he held a seminar in Madhuban in the history hall, and he got all the senior sisters and brothers, and he made them, he had a seminar on remembrance. Don't you love it? We have it on global functioning and all that stuff. Baba had it on the absolute heart of this life. And from what I heard is that Baba went around the circle saying, how much do you remember Baba? How much do you, everyone he asked. And when he came to Dadiji, he asked her, how long do you remember Baba? And Dadiji said, 1 hour a day. I was so happy when I heard that. Really made me feel good. But, you know, I really thought about that. Baba praised her for her honesty. Because what I've seen is two types of love. There's that indirect love, that devotional love, which is that sort of bhakti love. And I feel a lot of us still work on that. You know, that it's almost like you're in love with the concept God's the ocean of love. You're sort of more loving the belief. And that's an incredible belief, that somewhere in this universe there is a being who's absolutely loving. But the direct love is the spiritual love. It's the love of the yogi, where the yogi becomes like the one I'm loving. I become the seed, the bindi, the point, and I resonate on the same frequency with the one who's a point. And often I think, you know, that if I love the one who's, you know, incorporeal, egoless, and viceless, what do I become? What do I become? It's a natural consequence. But if I love the one, which we all do, we're all here because we love Baba. He's, you know, the one who's incorporeal, egoless, and viceless. But if I also love human beings, I'm still seeking love from human beings. I've thought about this so deeply. Why Baba makes it absolute, like his number one Srimat, is really children forget the body and the relations of the body and remember me alone. Because when I remember a human being, it's like a soul in a name and form. It strengthens my body conscious sanskaras. It sort of reinforces the impurity. So what's happening? I wake up, I remember Shiv Baba, the incorporeal, egoless, and viceless. A second, millisecond later, I remember a human being. And so I elevate, and then I sort of go back to my old story. And then sometimes I wonder why I'm not really moving forward in Brahman life. Because it's like, I do remember Baba, but then I remember human beings. I give power back to my old story. I keep reinforcing the impurity in the soul. And then I think I've been a Brahman for so long. I'm committed to Baba. I'm committed to Baba's service. But I don't think I've really changed, because to me, the most powerful point of spiritual knowledge is all relationships with one. And what I've observed in the yajna is the soul that has that sort of sanskara wins God's trust. God will, really, Baba will put that soul in front, because Baba knows he's the main influence on the soul. And that's when I think really a deep transformation happens. And for me, during the whole COVID period, the thing that really I decided I had to get to the bottom of was remembrance. The number one subject that Baba talks about every day. And, you know, I think ultimately we absorb the ocean of knowledge for one thing, to remember Baba, don't we? That's the ultimate aim of this life. And what I'm really loving at the moment is everything natural. And I feel that's Baba's method. The first, the most natural thing in the DNA of the human spirit is to fall in love. We all have that capacity. When I recognize Shiv Baba, I fall in love with Baba. I will naturally remember the one I fall in love with. That's the way Baba wants. So there's a natural love, and then I naturally remember that one. And when I naturally remember, I will naturally transform, because I'm more with the one who's incorporeal, egoless, and viceless. And so I'm less visiting the body, bodily relationships and reinforcing that story. And then when I'm naturally transforming, I naturally serve. I serve from who I am. I'm not serving because I have a clever intellect or I'm skillful or talented, but because there is that love and relationship and remembrance, then, you know, it shows through the drishti, it shows through the face, it shows through the vibrations. It's just, and I think everything Baba teaches is so natural, actually. It's not, and you know, whenever I find myself forcing myself, pushing myself, you know, that sort of thing, pressuring the self in sort of effort, to me that's bhakti. I'm approaching, it's a bhakti approach to Brahman life, you know, this sort of, that effort is force, pressure, putting all these expectations on myself. Really, I think Baba's method is this natural love, natural remembrance, natural transformation, natural service in that way. But remembering is the most natural thing to the human consciousness. In fact, all the intellect ever does is remember. At every millisecond, the intellect is connecting with something. And I've begun to realize that in a sense, the soul sits in the body, but the intellect is constantly traveling. It's constantly traveling. And it's all beyond time. It connects those three things. In an instant, it will connect. It will be influenced, secondly, and thirdly, you'll have a feeling. And this is what I've been exploring over the last, whatever I would say, you know, last few years, just observing this process that whatever you connect with, you're instantly influenced by, and that's the feeling, your stage, the vibration in your mind. And so if I connect with Shiv Baba, I'm influenced by Baba, and that I live stream that vibration inside. I get that feeling inside. But if in the next millisecond you connect with a situation, a person, you connect there, you're influenced by that, and you bring that energy back into your mind. And how you sometimes sit at Amrit Vela anytime and you want to remember Baba. And you have such a pure intent, I'm going to sit and remember Baba. And you do for 2.1 seconds. And then, boom, you've landed somewhere. You know, you've traveled across the universe and you've landed somewhere. It's not even a bad place. And how deep is that traveling? You know why? I honestly believe that the myth that we've all been brought up in, the myth of the body conscious culture, is that love is out there. Peace, love and happiness is out there. And so that's why the mind, you sit to, it just always travels outside, 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 outside. Because that's what we've been told. We've always looked for love and everything externally. And this is, you know, and I've just watched, you know, how the intellect jumps like a kangaroo. You know, just boom, boom, boom. It just keeps jumping. And that's when I really felt the effort of Sakha Baba was absolutely incredible. That he paid attention to that nature of the intellect to travel to a child, to a family member, to a situation, whatever it is, and be influenced by that. And yeah, I've really been processing this, and I sort of see the intellect as a subtle thread that sort of travels, plugs in. Whatever I plug into, it's almost like I put myself under that influence. It's like a shadow that affects me. And then sometimes I wonder, you know, why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. You know, I honestly feel if I'm not that happy, if I'm not feeling good, there's only one question to ask. What have I been remembering? What have I plugged my head into that I'm influenced by? And you'll notice that, you know, you'll notice that you've sort of plugged your thinking into a situation. And, you know, you start to process it and analyze it. And it's almost like you put yourself under the influence of an account. And, you know, I've been asking myself, what drives my intellect? What drives my intellect? Because up until now, it's my karmic accounts. And that's why sometimes your intellect starts to remember somebody and it's not a good experience, you know. You don't feel happy, but you can't stop. You just go back and back and back and back because you don't have the power to withdraw your intellect from remembering that person or that situation. And yet a divine intellect is powered by God's love and truth. And even when you do that kangaroo jump and you start to think of someone, something, you have the power to reconnect with, you know, your true self and Baba. And I think really this life boils down to deep attention. It's just, and it's not a stressful thing, it's just this wonderful sort of attention to where the subtle thread of my intellect is traveling to, plugging into, and what am I putting myself under the influence? I'm put myself under an influence. So I think, you know, that first sort of thing that really changes some, you know, the or loving Baba as a soul, that a permanent relationship. The second is loving myself as a soul. And one of the big things that I've realized, that there's a deep relationship between ego and love. The more ego, the less love I have in life. It's as simple as that. And the paradox is often when you don't experience love in life, the ego seeks attention because I want your love. And the more you become attention seeking, the more people just don't, you know, avoid you. And so that paradox really begins to happen, because what is the role of ego? What is the role of ego? Ego makes you feel separate. That's the role of ego. Ego makes you feel separate from true love, the love of God, makes you feel separate from Baba. Ego makes you feel separate from your true self. Ego definitely makes you feel separate from others. When you sort of feel in your head, oh, I don't really belong, people don't want me, people don't love me, you sort of feel separate, different. That's not them. It's all in your head. It's a whole construct that you've created in your head, because your ego is sort of so caught up in me and you and us and them. You sort of feel so separated from truth in that way. And one of the mullis that Baba spoke years ago once was really helpful to me in this context too. When Baba just said, children, for spiritual progress, let go the eye of arrogance and the eye of disheartenment and emerge the eye of soul consciousness. And in a way, I think Baba was, that's the formula to really feel a connection, a belonging, a real sense of Baba's presence. Because I think, what is the role of ego? Ego makes you feel separate from others and Baba. Lack of self-respect makes you feel separate from your true self and Baba. And so you just feel disconnected. You just feel when you're soul conscious, it's like you're moving onto Baba's wavelength in that way. And then the third thing is really having loving relationships with others as souls. And that's, you know, just think, we've had 2,500 years of that. We know, we have all of us experienced relationships with perfectly loving, pure relationships with others as souls. And when I had my 30th spiritual birthday, it was in actually... we were in the Diamond Hall, and there was a few foreigners who were, you know, enjoying their 30th spiritual birthday, and Baba told us to stand up. Baba said, all those who are 30 years in Gyan, stand up, and we all stood up. Baba gave us drishti, and then Baba said, set a date for perfection. And a few of us sort of thought, how do you do that? You know? It's a very deep thing, actually, because you know how we just meander along? We just sort of go along. But Baba's saying, no, you actually got to set a focus. And I remember afterwards a few of us were saying, well, really, what is perfection? What does perfection look like in real terms? We use all these big flowery words, but in reality, in real day-to-day existence, what does perfection look like? The very next morning, Baba said, perfection is to have loving feelings for everyone. That's how Baba defined perfection. And you know, we were saying that we live in a world, look at the variety of sanskaras in our world. There is every imaginable type of human being, you know. Some who are so sweet, some who are so bitter, some who are so cooperative, some who are so uncooperative. And just, we all know, don't we? And all of us are coming in touch with this incredible variety of souls, with an incredible variety of sanskaras. And yet, Baba's saying, children, have loving feelings for everyone. And I think, you know, that's an amazing feeling. And for me, I think that ultimately that's only possible when you become completely detached. And I would say the sign of a soul who really loves God. We all say, oh, we love Baba, but the real sign, they're deeply detached. Why? They're so in love with Baba, they pull beyond the influences of this world. You know, they're so in love with Baba, almost automatically, all the pettiest stuff, they're just pulled beyond. And really, to me, detachment means to be deeply loving, deeply caring, respectful, communicating, but uninfluenced by. And this is purity. This is actually purity. But it's not that the way to do it, it's not that you sort of think all the time, must be detached. You know, I can't be influenced. That never works. I've never seen that side. It's actually when you fall so deeply in love with Baba, it's sort of like you're lifted out of the, you know, that sort of human gravity, the gravity of human feelings, human emotions, opinions, ideas, behaviors, all the stuff that we know we can just get stuck in. It takes you beyond that. And so when you are completely detached, you really can be completely loving. And recently in the Sakamoli, and I've observed this every few years, Baba has said, you know how Baba takes up themes in the Sakamolis? And Baba said that children, the highest effort of all efforts is to see the other as a soul. And that really signals to me, you know, that's an incredibly deep thing. My experience was when I came in Gyan, I can remember I had a job in the heart of London. I used to walk down the street, you know, oh, looking at all the people. You're a soul, who's done that? It's the sweet times of childhood. And yet, I'm just imagining a soul sitting in the floor. Actually, I'm quite body conscious. I'm just seeing a body, imagining how a soul sits in a body. The more I start to experience, secondly, myself as a bodiless soul, I somehow can see the bodiless soul. The thing that really helped me next was, the third thing was, I really went through a period of years where I was exploring what it means to be incorporeal. The feeling of being non-physical, that the reality of my existence, and I'm non-physical, and to see the non-physical in the physical, that's the most incredible thing to see. You can only do it when you're really experiencing how you're incorporeal, you're separate from matter. And even I've been sharing a bit recently, someone in Australia told me recently that this body, scientists now say, is made up of 40 trillion cells. Can you get your head around that? It's just this infinite number of little building blocks. And yet in that 40 trillion, there's one soul that is more subtle than even one of those cells. Just get your head around what a human soul is really. It's unbelievable when you really think. So when you start to taste how you sort of sit in this material form, and then you see how the other sits in that material form. And not only that, but even you go a step further and you see how this unbelievably subtle entity sits in that material form temporarily, and it has an eternal part recorded in it. And when you sort of observe this incorporeal being with its eternal part, it's almost like you naturally observe. You're not absorbing their part and their behavior. You're a natural observer. And when you're a natural observer, you're not influenced, you can love them, because you're not influenced by them. If you're influenced by them, you can love them sometimes, and, you know, the game of like, dislike, all that sort of thing begins to happen. And so, you know, I think really Baba's real method is, I think the natural thing, I like that word, the natural approach to this life, which I observed in, especially I think in the daddies, Daddy G. Daddy G just seemed the most natural BK. She just seemed totally in love with Baba and remembered Baba. She was very detached. I'd been with her sometimes. I just realized how deeply everyone remembers her love, but actually she was completely detached. I've seen it on some occasions, and you know, and uninfluenced in that way. And that's when we're in love with Baba, then we naturally remember, and then it's almost an automatic process of healing and transformation of sanskaras takes place, and then who I am as a person serves. I don't have to think too much about what to do. My vibrations, etc., will naturally serve. So I'm looking at the time a little bit, and we were going to leave a little bit of time if anyone wants to ask some questions. I don't know if Darcy's got, whether you can type into the chat or anyone in the room. There's a microphone here.
So maybe we'll be able to take one or two questions. So maybe first we can ask if anyone here in the room has any questions, then you can come in the front and ask the question. Thank you.
So it'd be nice to, so everyone online can, when they see you, introduce yourself, who you are and where you're from. Lolita from Japan.
I introduced already. two words sort of stuck in my mind when you were talking. We all know those two words, remembrance and love. Now, Baba's always telling us, remember me, forget bodily beings, forget. On the other hand, the word love, like you said, is natural. It's a part of the soul to love. So to remember human beings, could you define what does it mean to remember human beings, which is negative? You have said a few things like not get influenced and all that, but I think it's so natural to remember human beings, and there's nothing wrong in remembering human beings if we are doing it in a nice way and if we are remembering their good things. That should add to us loving Baba, because Baba is virtues. And if I'm remembering human beings, and like you said about Golden Age, everyone lives together, and I'm sure we all interact with each other. We don't stay detached in that sense, but I don't know if I'm making any sense, but...
No, you are. And I think, you know, why does it work in the Golden Age and not so work now? Because we remember human beings in the Golden Age because we have a natural soul consciousness. And it's almost like if you remember a human being and it's in, without thinking, you subconsciously sort of remember their human form. The word my comes into it, my relation, my, and there's sort of the account opens. So there's sort of like a pull and, you know, the whole human form comes in. Whereas in the Golden Age and in soul consciousness, you're a soul, you're detached, you're not influenced by them. So it's, you know, it's true, you can see virtue in people and that sort of thing, but mostly, you know, I would say today the human intellect is a slave to human beings, meaning I either feel so attracted to them, so want their company, so needy, or I feel so deeply hurt and angry. And you know, there's a world full of human beings who feel so deeply betrayed, hurt, and bitter about human relationships. We all know, right? It's just so much a part of life because, you know, we've sought love from them And, you know, we don't get that. It's limited. It's limited love. And I think that's, you know, when we still even subtly, because in the second half of the cycle, that's all we've really known, human love. And even though we know God, we still go there because that's what I've known. You know, I once heard someone share, it's a weird little example. A scientist was doing an experiment with a little fish in a tank. And the little fish was swimming around the tank, and he put food in one end, and the little fish would come and eat and come and eat. Then he put a glass wall in the middle of the tank, and the little fish was at the other end. So every time he went to go and get his food, he'd knock his nose on the glass. So he, after a while, realized he's not going to get anything. And then they lifted out the glass, and yet he just kept swimming in half the tank, and he died of starvation. Sad story, I know. Yeah, but it's like us. You know, Baba's there, but we're so stuck in temporary, limited human love. And I would say it's the biggest block for Brahmins. It's just, it is, that's been our mental framework for half the cycle. And we can't really, and that's the block to really not just having that devotional love that Baba is the ocean of love, but that yogi love, that real love that I'm in touch, I'm connected, I'm experiencing this real sort of union with Shiv Baba. And that's why this is a high path, because the way Baba has it is that really it only works when you have all relationships with him. Then it really works, and that's why it's such a... And of course, you're dealing with people, you'll be around. You know, we're the family path, but within that, you know, even Brahma Babi had his Lokic family, the Brahman family. He cared for them so much, but where was his focus? The daddies are the same too. Where were their focus? So sometimes we sort of feel the sannyasi approach works, you know. We're not sannyasis, you know, we've got to live together and yet learn how to remember Baba while living together.
Thank you, Brother Charlie. There is one question from our online viewers, if that's okay.
Yes, yes. That's fine. So where are they from, do we know?
No. So the question is, when we come to Baba, we all feel Baba's incredible love. However, for many of us, there can be the pull towards the old body-conscious love and attraction to souls. How do we deal with this, and why does it happen?
It's inevitable, because we, you know, it's almost like we have a honeymoon with Baba. Who's had a honeymoon with Baba? It's just like, oh, this is easy. You remember Baba, and then the old sanskaras creep back, and then you sometimes feel, well, Baba's so distant. You know, it was so easy, but it's almost, I would say, a part of the journey. It's almost like Baba gives us an experience, but we still, the intellect is under the influence of the sanskaras of the second half of the cycle. And this is where attention is, just to really, you know, work out how to remember Baba and not, you know, pay attention, not to go back to the remembrance of others. But as I said, I don't think it works with force and pressure and all that. It works when I fall in love with Baba. That's the real method. And that's the thing, you know, that's the question all of us have to really ask ourselves deeply. How do I really fall in love with the one who's incorporeal, egoless and viceless, the one who's so subtle, the one who I can't touch and, you know, see through my sense organs? It's a whole new education. Human love is very gross. It's palpable. People will speak to, I love you and all that. But God's love, everything about it is subtle. So I have to put myself in a whole new awareness and not feel hopeless. But it's a journey of learning. That's why I'm saying this incredible education, the confluence age of how to love accurately. It's almost, I think, really, if I love accurately, I'll become pure. It's that simple. Maybe it's not that simple. I'm making it too simple. But really, that's the formula that I've seen in those souls who really just, we can see, you know, the daddies and others who just reach that incredible stage. Mm.
Thank you. So basically not using the old bhakti sanskaras, but keep finding new ways to fall in love with Baba again and again.
Yeah, we really have to. You know, someone once said to me, you can only love someone who's lovable. And sometimes we have bhakti sanskaras that God's, you know, punishing and authoritarian and judgmental. And that's a little bit of, you know, some people have had religious backgrounds like that. And there's a little bit of fear. And where there's fear, there's not love, you know. We need a lot of patience to sort of really understand exactly who Baba is. And that no one can love me like him. No one is as lovable as Baba and loving. And really just keep exploring, keep learning and move in that direction.
So thank you. So thank you for sharing such an invaluable jewels of knowledge. And another speciality that comes to mind of Brother Charlie is he shares Gyan in such an entertaining way with lots of stories, but still yet deliver the message in a very easy way, like he says. So we will have meditation till 7:30, and I would like to thank all our online viewers, and I'm sure you would have felt the vibes of this meditation hall, and we would like you to join us meditation till 7:30. Brother Charlie will lead the meditation, and Brother David is going to play some live instrument music.
Oh,
so
David's
here
with us. That's wonderful. Can I just ask, just for interest, how many are online? How many come on?
About
300
in English.
Oh, okay. Okay, 300. Yeah. Isn't it an amazing world we're living in now? We're sort of like connect all over. It's wonderful. And we have on different language groups too. Okay, lovely. Welcome to everybody out there. Welcome to Madhavan Meditation Hall. Thank you, Sister Dati. Now we have the wonderful Brother David who's going to serenade us into a deep remembrance of the ocean of love.
The feeling you've been here before, looking back on all the steps you've taken to this door. Have you tasted such a love on the rocky road of search? Now the food is ripe to pick, it takes away the hurt.